With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Hey, Tennis.com podcast listeners. This is a special episode with Nicole Melikar. I'm Nina Pantic, and I'll be your host in this interview, as well as Irina Falcone. Nicole has had an incredible summer this year after the reopening of the tour. She won the title in Strasbourg, reached the final in Cincinnati and the U.S. Open, and reached the semifinals of the French Open, pushing her ranking to a career-high number 11. She tells us all about her crazy 2020 season, as well as talks about how she became a doubles specialist, what her goals are for 2021, and what it was like to partner with French Open champion Iga Swiatek. Nicole has a lot of experience to share with us about being a doubles superstar. She has won 8 WTA titles, is a 2-time Grand Slam finalist, and won the mixed doubles Grand Slam title at Wimbledon in 2018 with Alexander Paya. So without further ado, let's get into our interview with Nicole Melikar. Hey, Nicole Melikar, thank you for joining us on the Tennis.com podcast. It's awesome to have you.
And I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
So we want to start off by asking you where in the world you are at this moment and what you've been up to.
Well, I'm at home. I live in Bradenton, Florida, and it's currently not raining because I know it's raining where Irina is in Orlando. But I finished my season. So French Open was my last tournament, and it's been about 10 or 11 days since. Honestly, I went to go visit family in the Czech Republic, my grandparents, some cousins. It was really nice. And then when I got back a few days ago, I've just been relaxing and enjoying for the most part. I hit once. I played some like family doubles with my parents. So a little hit and giggle, and I might go hit today just for fun as well. But yeah, just sort of been enjoying not having to train and just giving my body a little bit of a break.
That's so good. You seem like a pro now at the COVID travel. You've been to so many different tournaments since the reopening of the tour, but how has your 2020 been from the start? I mean, you kicked off in January and then the shutdown happened. Long break. Walk us through what 2020 has been like for you.
Yeah, well, I started the season in Australia. I did well there, won my first title of 2020 in Adelaide, and then didn't do well in Aussie Open, unfortunately, but played Doha and Dubai. And then as that was going on, like we started hearing about the virus during Aussie Open, how it was spreading through China. And it was like, okay, there's something going on. And then as we were in Doha and Dubai, we started hearing more about it and how it's spreading to different countries. And that's when the world started, you know, you could hear them slowly start panicking and that Europe was going to go into lockdown. But then I honestly didn't think much of it. I never thought that a virus could really shut down the world. So flew home, was a few days at home, went to Indian Wells, and then all of a sudden Indian Wells gets canceled and you're like, what? What just happened? So I went home, and then once everything got canceled, I never stopped practicing. I was practicing every probably 2 or 3 days a week, just because if I stop hitting, I feel like I'm almost useless playing tennis. So I at least wanted to hit every few days just to like feel the ball and have some rhythm. But I did a lot of other things. I was doing rollerblading and biking and swimming, yoga, Pilates, gym workouts, and just a lot of different things for my body, which I think really helped. It helped me get fitter and also helped with injury prevention, because I think if you do a lot of different things for your body adapts. Just if, you know, if you have a funny movement, it's used to doing different movements. So when I started again the season, I started with World Team Tennis. Nina, you were there.
Yep.
And I actually right off the bat, I played really well. I was playing with Coco for San Diego and then for New York, and just had a great run. We won most of our matches. We ended up winning the title after getting traded to New York. And I just took that momentum into Cincy US Open and into Europe. I played really well with all the partners that I played with. So I think the time off just let me mentally relax and just, you know, enjoy life, but enjoy tennis for fun, not because I had to do it, but I wanted to do it. So I think that was important.
I think that's such a healthy like answer. We've had a lot of different people on the podcast, and we've had some people that trained every single day. We had some people that took like 4 months off, me included. I mean, we've had all kinds of different, you know, answers to that question. And honestly, I love hearing about it. It was very candid. And I think you bring up such a good point about doing other things, Pilates, yoga, and all different kinds of things that maybe you wouldn't have done before.
Mm-hmm. And actually now that I'm thinking about my preseason training, I feel like COVID, we didn't know how long it was going to last, but it was kind of like a preseason. Once we knew that maybe tournaments will happen, you start getting more serious and preparing again. But I can take that experience from COVID and be like, oh, like, you know, doing a bunch of different sports helped me. So now for my preseason, I feel like I have a good idea of what worked now because I had good results. So maybe I try and do something similar.
Do you have an idea as to when your preseason's going to start, or has it kind of started already? Or I mean, I guess it really never stopped for us.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I haven't really done much in the last 10 days. So like, I'll probably, I'm going to go hit after we're done with the podcast. And, you know, I want to hit, like I said, at least every 2 or 3 days, but, probably for still the next couple weeks, I'm going to take it easy, but I slowly want to, you know, I'll go on bike rides and rollerblade and stuff, but I need to talk with Torsten, my coach, and I need to talk with my fitness coach as well, just to see what the plan is and how much time we want to maybe we need to like work on and improve certain things. And also I need to know the timeline from the Australian Tennis Federation, just like, do I have to be in Australia by December 14th? That sounds awful. I don't want to go so soon, but if I have to go, then unfortunately I will go that early, but I'm really hoping they can move that timeline.
You have to go. You're pretty much a favorite now. Do you feel like a favorite even at majors? You reached the final of the US Open, semifinals of the French. You're ranked number 11 in the world. Does it feel different going into the next year, even though things are crazy in terms of it getting into a draw? Does it feel different?
I feel like I've, over the last couple of years, 2018, I made my first Grand Slam final. Last year, I had a very solid year. And then this year, I made another Grand Slam final. So I've definitely developed more of a belief in myself and in my game. So I think more than anything, I don't think anything has changed from the outside, or at least I don't feel that. But I feel like just personally, like the belief in myself has grown over the last few years. And I really want to get that doubles major title under my belt. So I feel a confidence going in, but I don't want to put pressure on myself. Like, oh, I have to win the Australian Open or the French Open. No, I still want to continue to try and improve and grow. But I feel that, that I would like to think that I have what it takes to win one of those bigger tournaments.
I'm sorry. Did you say a doubles majors title?
A doubles major title.
Yeah. Do you not have a mixed doubles majors title?
I do. I have a mix, but not
I'm pretty
double.
Sure Nina and I do not have a mixed doubles majors title from Wimbledon. Like Wimbledon. I know about myself. I don't think Nina has got one. So that's pretty amazing. So please like do not just put that to the side. That is awesome.
No, I'm not. I'm absolutely not putting it to the side, but I have the mixed one, but now I want one in doubles. Okay.
All right. Well, I remember seeing you after you had won that. And I thought it was the coolest thing. Cause I mean, not everyone can say they got a Wimbledon title. Your name is on the history wall forever. That's pretty awesome. And I remember you told me you were like, I asked you if you had family to come see you. And you said, yeah, my grandma was there because she had told me when I first started playing tennis, like that she would only come if I made it to the Wimbledon final. Mm-hmm. And you did. And
yes.
You came and you won. And I thought, I was like, that's the coolest story ever.
Yeah, and the better part was I made both Wimbledon finals, both doubles and mixed. So, yeah, no, that was amazing. Because even already when I had gotten to the semis, I was like, oh, maybe she'll come. She's like, nah, you have to make the final. Like, okay, grandma, okay, I'll make the final.
That is tough.
Pretty tough.
Is your whole family from the Czech Republic? You were actually born there, right, before moving to the States. What's your family history? Do you speak Czech?
I do speak Czech. Both of my parents are Czech. I was born there, but my parents already lived in the States at the time. It's a complicated story why I was born there. Long story short, my mom didn't have health insurance and my dad was over there on business. So it was easier for her to fly back and have me born there rather than me being born alone, like her alone in the States. So I do have dual citizenship. I have both passports, but I feel like I love my Czech culture and stuff, but I'm very American. I represent the USA. I love playing for America. I've played Fed Cup a couple of times and stuff, but I love my Czech background, the Czech food and the history and the cities there. Like it's really nice. I'm proud that I can have a little bit of both.
It's very useful as well to have that second passport and that ability to speak a language. That's pretty common in Europe. I love that.
Yeah, no, it's been good, especially now during COVID. It was so easy to get to Europe because if I showed the American passport, they're like, wait, where are your papers? Where's this? Where's that? And I showed the Czech passport, like, oh, yeah, you're fine. They don't even look and check if the picture is yours.
That's funny. Well, I feel like I'm sure you've gotten this question asked before, but I remember we were playing ITFs years ago and, you know, all of a sudden you go and you win a Wimbledon title. Like that is a significant difference. I understand that it happens to a lot of players, but I just want to know, was there anything in 2018 that happened that kind of really catapulted you and changed something in your game? And your, I know you did talk about belief. I just wanted to know if there was like a switch or something that you started doing.
Well, 2018 was the first full season that I had like a partner for the whole year. I played with Květa Peške. And it was the first time that I also had a full-time coach with Torsten, which is her husband. So I think just having that, and the year before, when I was playing with Anna Smith, I had like a taste of that because her and I played for half of the year and sometimes her coach came. So I started to have a feel of what it was like to have a coach and a steady partner. But in 2018, it was the real deal. It was the full-time coach and the partner, and that's just what you're doing. So I feel like adding that really helped because Torsten helped me develop the knowledge and just improve a lot. And being alongside someone who's been on the tour for so long and has already won a Wimbledon title and has been there, done that. So she didn't get nervous in any situation, really. She could really help guide me on the court. So I think it was just the big combination of everything. So improving my own game, having like a set structure on what to do, having a game plan with my partner and working and developing that like a player relationship, like with each other. So I used to think you don't really, or not, I didn't, I never thought you don't need a coach, but I thought like, oh, maybe you don't really need a coach kind of, but I really truly understand the value of having a coach. And I think it's very difficult to get past the top 50 in doubles to get higher than that without a coach. Like top 50 you can get, but if you want to get top 20, top 10 to those rankings, you need someone that supports you. You really do.
Hey everybody, you're listening to the Tennis.com podcast with special guest Nicole Melikar. She's telling us what it's like to be so amazingly good at doubles. Keep listening.
You talk about top 20 and top 10, and you're currently 11 in the world. So other than like the major title that you do want to get, the doubles major title, are there any other goals that you see for 2021? Granted, I know everything is kind of out in the open and kind of TBA. But just in like a kind of perfect world, what would you say some goals for you are?
Well, one of my goals for this year was to make top 10. That didn't happen. Obviously, I'm super thrilled with number 11, but I would like to get that top 10 mark if I'm going to push it farther, like top five, you know, like you always want to strive to be better. But overall, I think I would like to see myself be more consistent, going deeper into the draws more consistently. I did that now. Post COVID with Cincinnati, US Open, French Open, like I did very well. So I'd like to continue doing that, because before I feel like I would have good results, but a lot of first round losses. So if I can develop that consistency and also to stay healthy, I think that is a big goal in itself, just to really be mindful of my body and just listen to it and try and do the right things, even if I don't want to do the rehab exercises, force myself to do them and just do the routines, just because it's so good for me. And I think it'll help with the longevity of my career.
You've had a few different partners this year. And in general, you know, it's hard to kind of plan ahead who you're going to play with, and you try and stick these partnerships. It makes sense. But how do you practice day in and day out if you're not sure who you're going to play with? And if you're not training with that partner, like, that's, I feel like a dumb question there, but like, how do you train for doubles every single day?
Yeah, that's not a dumb question at all. It's actually an excellent question. Well, I feel like, like there's always things you can work on by yourself. You know, I can always, some things I really want to target that I think are two of the most important shots in tennis, whether it's singles or doubles, are the serve and the return. You know, you can always get more accurate with the serve. You can maybe increase the miles per hour. You can get the kick to jump higher, the slice to stay lower and stuff. So I think working on certain things technically and just seeing what I do well or what I don't do well in matches. Let's say if I'm rallying cross court and my partner is at the net, but you know, she needs to help me to poach every second or third ball because I can't hold the rally. Well, if I can hold the rally longer, then maybe she doesn't need to panic as much and try and poach. So I think there are things, even if you don't have the partner on the court with you, you can just work on individual things. And no one, I think no one has really perfect technique. And I think you can always, you know, improve your footwork or improve like the technique on your volleys and different things like that.
So Torsten Peschke, we talked about how he is the husband of Kaveta Peschke. And I'm just curious, is that tough being, having like a coach that's also the husband of the person that you were at one point playing with and potentially competing against sometimes?
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome and it's a little bit difficult at times, because when I was playing with her, because he normally coaches multiple players. So if we would play against another team that he's coaching, obviously it's human nature. He wants his wife to win. So when she was beside me, even though he wasn't coaching any of us, he was always excellent with, you know what, like, you girls, you know each other well enough. I stay out of it. I'm going to watch. I'll talk to you after the match. I'm not going to prepare you for it, but you girls know what to do. Go do your job. So I have a high level of respect that he always abided to those rules. But I always knew playing with her, he wanted me to win as well because he wanted her to win. But now this year I played against her twice. And even though, you know, he's not just my coach, he's also a very good friend and I'm very good friends with her. But you know, if I win, I know he wishes me well, but he still wanted Kveta to win. And it's one of those awkward things that, you know, you don't really want to say, come on, when you're playing against your friends or things like that. It's just, for me, it's more difficult. I try to know that they know it's not personal if I hit a good shot and I need to say, come on. But, you know, it's a sticky situation. You never want to be disrespectful, especially when you're playing against your friends.
Right. And I mean, I'm sure they've been in that situation before, though, too many times.
Oh, a million times. Kvita must have played against players that her husband has been coaching, I don't know, 50 times in her career. I don't know how many. So she for sure has been used to it. But I think it's always nice knowing that I think a coach always has the best intentions for their player. Or at least that's the way it should be. But you know, when like, he's her husband and you're playing with her, he's always going to tell you what he really thinks is right and what he wants you to work on. He's not going to guide you wrong. Why would he? So there's no there's no different motivation for him. He just wants you to improve. And that was always a nice peace of mind for me.
Doubles is so juicy. There's so many little dynamics that I think people aren't that aware of. All these like little intricacies. That's not even a word. I wanted to ask about the French Open. Your most recent tournament was in Paris, and you paired up with someone people might know, with Iga Świątek, or Świątek. We've trying to learn her name for weeks now. And yeah, what was it like first playing with her and then watching her win?
Well, I think I picked a really good partner, especially because it was 3 days before the sign-in deadline.
Oh my gosh. But someone that's 11 in the world, you can't think that you're going to have a problem finding a partner though.
Right. But no, finding a partner, no. But I wanted to find, I was really trying to find someone who I thought I had the potential of doing well with. So even though maybe some other players had reached out to me, I was still, you know, I was still trying to like find who I felt would best suit me. And I think I made a very good choice with Iga. And obviously we had no clue that she was going to win the tournament. Actually, before the tournament, we were joking. We were thinking about it. We're like, who's going to win the women's title? And as a joke, I was like, oh, Iga Świątek. And then my coach looked at me. I was like, oh, I think someone who's never won the French Open before will win. So in that sense, I think I was right.
You put it out there. That's well done.
Yeah, but no, playing with her, she's a very nice person, first of all. I didn't really know her before, but she is a genuinely kind-hearted person that, and I like those type of people. You never want to play with someone that you don't like. So first of all, that was wonderful. And then she always gave her best effort on the court. And because of her singles, I wanted to maybe teach her a little bit more doubles, because obviously singles players, if you don't practice doubles, it's different. But her instincts were so good, I felt like it was hard for me to tell her something because she felt the ball so well. So I really enjoyed playing with her, and I trusted her. She trusted me, and we made an excellent pairing. And I was happy we made the semis, but I feel like we definitely could have won that match. We had so many chances in the first set and lost the first set and then ended up losing the match. But to Desiree and Alexis' credit, they played an incredible match as well. So it was almost bittersweet. It was like, oh, we made the semis, but I felt we could have gone farther too. So it was bittersweet. Let's say that.
You wouldn't be an athlete or a champion if you didn't think that you could do better. I mean, that's just the mentality.
Exactly. Yeah,
it must be nice to be 11 in the world. Now you get to be picky with your doubles partners in a sense. Like I remember obviously never being in close to that realm, but you know, once you start getting top 100, top 75, top four, like top 60, then all of a sudden, you know, you get to be a little picky. So I'm guessing like 11 in the world, you get to be very picky with your partners.
Yeah. I mean, I always remember the grind and what it takes to get up there. And I remember maybe when we played, you know, I remember asking you 100 times to play with me, and then finally you gave me a chance and we did well. Oh my God. And, you know, and there's always, you know, when I was lower ranked and I was asking the higher ranked players, like, play with me. And they were picky. And it's just, you just always want to feel like you're picking the partner that will best suit you. And it's not always the highest ranked player. I actually had higher ranked players asking me, but I think the pickiness goes with what combination you think, what maybe has great potential. When you're 11, you don't have to look at rankings. When you're maybe 50 or 60 in the world, you have to look at rankings because you just want to get in to the tournament. You're like, oh, what's our combined ranking? Oh, your ranking's three spots higher. Okay, I play with you. But now with 11, I have many more options, because if the cutoff is 100, then I need someone in the top 80. So then I have more options. So it's definitely a good position to be in. But I always want to try and be mindful of, I used to be in that position as well. So I still try and be respectful to everyone. And hopefully I am. Hopefully because I never, my intentions are never to be rude or to be mean or anything.
I've never heard anyone say anything bad about you, so you're doing well.
Okay. Thank you. I'm curious about your process in becoming this double superstar. Did you turn pro as a teenager and obviously with the intention of playing singles as well? What was your process like when you first joined the tour?
I mean, I never thought I was going to be a double specialist, to be honest. I don't think players grow up with the intention of, oh, I want to play doubles. I think doubles is an amazing career and I absolutely love it. I've learned to love the sport more than singles, actually, because I think there's just so much more diversity in doubles, just with like the things you can do on the court with four players. But growing up, I wanted to be a singles champion and I tried that career, but I didn't have much money. I didn't have a coach to travel with me. I wasn't progressing in the rankings as quickly as I would have liked. And then unfortunately I got mono, so I got sick. And then when I came back from mono too soon, I couldn't really win many singles matches because I was getting too tired. So, but I was winning doubles matches because you didn't have to be on the court as long with the NOAD scoring format. So as my doubles ranking went up and my singles ranking didn't, then I started to get into bigger tournaments and doubles that WTA events, they pay for your hotel as long as you're in the tournament and you get more prize money. So it was almost like follow the money. And then, yeah, my rankings were too far apart. And then I had to make a choice. Okay, do I want to grind and still do the singles dream? Or do I go with doubles, which actually I think my game is better suited for. So I chose the doubles route.
And it's worked out.
Like you made a really good decision.
I don't regret my decision at all. I'm really happy with it. And I think I'm seeing more players like see that maybe they don't really do so well in singles, but then they're doing that doubles route earlier as well. I think the average age of doubles players has gone down, like is younger nowadays than it was maybe 10 or 15 years ago.
It's yeah, good. I mean, you just bought your first house how many years ago? Just a couple of years ago? And
yeah, 2018.
Clearly, I mean, it's not a bad way to go.
Hi, everyone. You're listening to an episode of the Tennis.com podcast with Nina Pantic and Irina Falcone. Our special guest, Nicole Melikar, is telling us what it was like to compete with Iga Świątek at the French Open. Keep listening for more. I definitely wanted to ask you, for those that are not watching this episode on YouTube or Facebook, you are wearing a Neptune shirt. You've been wearing this brand for a little while. I think it's been all year. Can you tell us about Neptune and what it is?
Well, a friend of mine, Patrick Frangi, and his friend Don Mann, who is a former Navy SEAL from Team 6, I believe. I need to get my history on that more accurate for these interviews. But they thought something was missing from they wanted to build their own brand and something that they could make a name that like really inspired. And just like showed like how you can like work hard and stuff. So they came up with the name Neptune because Navy SEAL, King Neptune with the water, it makes sense. And also a lot of Navy SEALs tattoo the trident on their shoulder. So the E being like a trident and their philosophy, like fear the trident, it sort of all mixes together. But they wanted to develop a clothing brand, just an athletic clothing brand for military, for Army, Navy, just athletic people in general, gym, tennis. Like they wanted to do many different athletic wear. And the material is really nice. They have different, a few different fabrics for different items, but all the material has been very high quality. And I've even helped design some of the tennis clothes. So I've given a lot of input in that and they just continue to grow. They launched about a month ago, the website. And I think they've been pretty successful so far. I think they've had like steady orders. So, you know, they're just going to try and grow and see how big they can get. But obviously without reducing the quality, they want to keep the quality very high. They want to do something similar like Lululemon. Like, you know, when you go and buy something, it's going to last a long time. It's not going to stretch. It's not going to do things, but it's just it's a good fabric, but actually looks nice as well. And they also want to, at some point, make tennis shoes, because actually there aren't that many companies that make good tennis shoes. I have been wearing Mizuno's for many years. I think Asics has very good tennis shoes, but outside of those two shoes, no shoes actually fit my feet. But outside of, you know, you can add Nike and Adidas and maybe Lotto in there. But other than that, I can't really think of many companies that make a good tennis shoe. So I think they have a good market for that as well.
That's awesome. Well, it looks good. I'm friends with Madison Keys and Bjorn Fertangelo, who is also wearing their stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was showing me a few of the items, and yeah, the fabric is top notch.
Yeah. Bjorn just was added, Katarina Stewart and Aljaž Bedene, the Slovenian guy. So it'll be us four. So hopefully Bjorn and Kat can do well now before Aussie, and then hopefully they can get into Aussie Open as well. Because I know that's Bjorn's awesome. Been hurt and stuff.
I love but that you're
since the- we're on a podcast, I will say if anyone wants to shop Neptune, I have a 15% discount code.
Hey, go ahead.
It's N Melikar, so N Melikar, all capital, for a 15% discount.
Sweet. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Tell everyone about it, because it is really cool to be at the ground level of something that's just launching. It's really fun to see a new company, and we're seeing them adding players. You mentioned them, so that's awesome. Mm-hmm. I definitely thought you were designing the clothes, so I'm glad that you are, because that's what I thought in my head.
Mm-hmm. That is, yeah, I'm definitely cool. Helping with the color schemes and different stuff and giving a lot of feedback.
That's awesome.
That's so fun. That's awesome. I feel like you're such a good role model for anyone, you know, in terms of everything you're doing and like your attitude and how nice you are. I've really enjoyed talking with you, and I hope that you've enjoyed our time here on the podcast.
Thank you. I have enjoyed the time, and if you want to do it again, let me know.
Awesome. Well, we wish you the best of luck in these undetermined times, Nicole. And yeah, stay safe, be healthy. Most importantly, be healthy, be happy, and good luck.
Likewise, ladies. It was nice to see you, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
See ya.
From the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, this has been the Tennis.com Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to stay caught up. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and every major listening app, as well as tennis.com/podcasts. You can also see the videos of our episodes on Tennis Channel's YouTube page and Tennis.com's Facebook page. We're your hosts, Nina Pantic and Irina Falcone. We'd like to thank our team, editor and audio designer and video editor Christina Koseva, producers Alexa March and Sean O'Malley, and executive producers Shelby Coleman, Kyle Einhorn, and Andy Chu.